This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The demand for local food and farm-to-table fare is changing American agriculture and food production. And these burgeoning local food systems have opened up new opportunities for women. The meat business, for example, is no longer just a man's world. From farming to meat processing and butchery, more women have begun to own and operate businesses throughout the meat supply chain.
So I'll take this piece, I'll take my steaks, I'm going to cut across the grain. Look at that. See? And this piece of meat is very popular in the Pacific Rim countries. And they love the internal marbling. And look at how we're exposing that marble. And that's what's so wonderful. This is the fourth most tender muscle. It does not need to be braising in a pot roast for 6 hours on a Sunday afternoon. This should be outside when you're doing yard work, on the grill, having nice steaks.
That's Carrie Underley, third-generation butcher who spent the last 3 days leading the second annual Women Working in the Meat Business Conference. It's an event that brings women together from around the country to talk about the unique challenges of our changing food systems and how to best grow their meat businesses. Three of those women join me now. Carrie Underley is a butcher and the author of The Art of Beef Cutting. Carrie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hello.
Didn't bring any knives. Okay, good. Robin Hampton, farmer and meat marketer who co-owns Back Creek in Mount Ulla, North Carolina. Robin, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Sarah Blacklin. She is the director of NC Choices. It's an initiative that promotes the advancement of local and niche meat. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Let me stay right with you. Tell us a bit about this conference and what's behind it. What's the point of it?
Sure. Well, this actually grew out of demand. We started this in 2012. We had a Carolina Meat Conference, which is a big conference that NC Choices puts on. And NC Choices is a program based at a Center for Environmental Farming Systems. And we just had a panel discussion of women in the meat business. And we didn't know if there would be 5 people in the room or 25 people in the room. And Carrie was there, and it was packed. And we had butchers and farmers and processors and regulators and everyone in between. And since then, it has developed to a seminar that we held. Our first one was last year, and then we are holding our second one this year. So as we see more and more demand for local meat, we're seeing women step in to advance the supply chain and in various businesses across the
country. And talk about that, because so much of that is invisible to us. It is a supply chain.
That's
and
right.
For those of us who demand a sustainable, locally grown produce, because we are what we eat and we care, mm-hmm. It's a long way from the farm to our fork. There's a lot of steps in between, particularly if we want it processed, right?
That's right. That's right. And so the beef industry, which has been traditionally owned and operated by men, as we are seeing this demand for local pasture niche meat, and that's going all the way to the consumer, we now have to problem solve and figure it out. How are we going to get more of that meat to those consumers? And that's where we're seeing women really step in. How do we figure out the distribution piece? How do we figure out the processing piece and the marketing piece, the IT piece and the software piece? It's not as simple, unfortunately, as vegetable production, where you really retain ownership of that product the whole way. With meat, you have many different people involved in the process.
Well, Carrie, you're a third-generation butcher. Tell us about your family and how you've seen the meat industry evolve. But I want to first start with how you got involved yourself and your father's involvement in the meat business.
Well, sure. I'm a third-generation butcher, and both my grandmothers are butchers, which is really unusual. My grandfather's a butcher and my dad's a butcher, so I really didn't have a chance. It's literally in my DNA. And one of my first memories was with my grandmother making Polish sausage in our basement. And my dad worked as a craftsman, so he was a journeyman meat cutter. He really took pride in his skill, and as the evolution of the meat industry has changed, he lost that skill set because we no longer valued making food with our hands. And so something changed within my dad, and I think that's never left me, and that's why I have such a passion for education and training, and especially women, you know, helping them make a better wage, giving them skill sets to help them convert convert the cows into beef and food on our plates.
It was unusual for your grandmothers to be butchers, wasn't it? In fact, your father didn't even want you to get into this business.
No, not at all. I mean, he was not very supportive. He wanted me to do something else. I mean, not many fathers really want their girls, daughters growing up in the meat department, but I saw it as a way to put my way through college. and realizing that the path that my dad had, there weren't any jobs left to continue that trade. So I put my way through college cutting meat. I became a journeyman meat cutter and also have a college degree. So on second thought, maybe I should have become a surgeon.
Well, you can do both. You can retire, become a surgeon. Yeah. Robin, you're on the production end and you've been at it for more than 20 years. How have you seen the role of women change in that time?
Well, it's probably more like 30 years, but my husband and I, we had the registered Angus seed stock, and over time, we're in a populated area near Charlotte, and we were in a triangle of large populous centers that we have been market of selling registered Angus bulls seed stock, but in an area where land is high priced, there's more people that want to eat good meat than buy a bull. And so it takes both of us to make that operation work. And we've worked together in making breeding decisions. And we both have off-farm jobs to help this habit of living on the farm with the cattle. We also run sheep, but it takes a lot of labor. It takes a lot of love to do that. And it's just, I guess with my career, I was active as a female in employee organizations and North Carolina Angus Association, and just active in those things. And it just seemed a local fit to be more active in helping market the animals, whether that's through registered bull sales or as Angus meat, that's a good eating experience.
Well, certainly one of the things that has changed for all of us in that 30 years that you've been in the business is this this growth in local food production and consumption. And so I suppose when you got into the business, if you were selling meat, you were selling it to big processors who were going national. I don't know. Or were you selling direct to consumers and more local stuff?
We would guarantee our bulls. And so if it wasn't going to be a benefit, a good breeding piece for someone, the offside of that is the meat. You can steer them and make good eating experiences. And yes, if you had a cull, you'd send them to the weekly market and take whatever they were willing to give you. But with the local drive for knowing where your food is produced and how it's treated, this is very much, we care for the animals, no added hormones, no added animal byproduct feed, no antibiotics. That's something we were doing anyway because we care for our animals and want them to be treated like other people want you to treat them.
Right.
But if you don't treat them in that manner, then it's going to cost you, and it's not cost effective. You know, if they're hungry and thirsty and you don't take care of them, then they're not going to make any money, and it has to be profitable. We have to make money to continue to stay in the business and produce the good eating experience that people, the consumers, want to eat.
So, Sarah, we talked about the supply chain and some of the problems you began to notice. People are going to farmers markets. They're asking for more and more. The demand is there. One of the choke points in all of this was processing, was trying to get this stuff that was grown maybe 60 miles from you processed. And then all of a sudden the carbon footprint went way up and the product wasn't that good. Right? I mean, because of the processing problems.
It's tricky. You know, North Carolina is a traditional meat state. We all know that, except and some might look at it and say we have tons of processors in North Carolina. That's true. Not many of those processors service farmers. They may be very big USDA plants. They may be independently owned. So we have to work with a lot of the family-owned operating processing facilities, and those are the ones that service farmers. And so they don't have necessarily the capital, and they have their own set of challenges, regulatory challenges and other hurdles, to be able to provide and meet the demand that we are asking for local meat, to provide all these varieties of smoked and cooked products. We want local meat everywhere, but it's a challenge for our processors to meet that too. And so some of what we're trying to do at NC Choices is bring everybody together. You'll hear in that clip that it is processors in the room, it's butchers in the room, it's farmers. It's not just an urban phenomenon. It is a phenomenon that's spanning across the spectrum. And so being able to hold it in Chapel Hill at Lantern Restaurant and have us all come together has been really a great opportunity to start to tackle some of these questions.
Are there cultural changes, though, in terms of the education that has to go on for people who have been doing it one way, if maybe producing for, you know, sort of large distributors, large meat packers, for processors who have been doing it one way into these big plants? Kind of cultural changes that this is now the new market and seeing things in a new way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in some ways, it's not a complete surprise that we have women stepping into this role, because women tend to be the primary shoppers of the household. Women tend to be good marketers. They're problem solvers, connectors. And where we are seeing this resurgence is in this growth of local and pastured meats. So when we're taking it off the farm and we're trying to get it into our local markets and eventually larger scale markets, it's women that are starting to step in and figure this piece out. So in some ways, it's not a huge surprise, but it is a shift. It's a cultural shift. But it's an opportunity, which is exciting.
And Carrie, the other surprise and shift in all of this is all of the great cuts of meat that we never knew were available. All that shrink wrap stuff we've been eating all our lives is only a fraction of what we could be having, right?
Yes, and that's when we were working with local processors, and they see me walk in the door, they get a little nervous because I'm the one that's in there teaching them about, you know, the Flatiron, the Denver cuts, and how to get these unique cuts, because we all can't just eat a beef tenderloin or a New York strip. I mean, it just doesn't work. The anatomy does not work. And so we've been really having a great time these last couple of days is, you know, sending in a cut sheet to the processor, giving them these cuts that are going to bring value. You can bring anywhere from $20 to $40 more per carcass to your animal by adding these value-added cuts. But, you know, it's a challenge because it's a new way of thinking. It's a new way of processing. We're giving our farmers a better voice, a larger voice, and they're demanding, you know, specialty cuts. And, you know, to be fair to the processor, we're putting a little bit more demand on them. And so we're asking them to join us in this shift as well. And we've got some challenges, but, you know, we've got a nice group of women now that I think feel empowered and have their voice and can go back to their local processor and ask for these cuts and understand that, you know, they got to do some cutting yesterday and realizing that deboning is hard and filleting is hard and, you know, realize that they're doing the best that they can, too.
Well, and there's a lot of great science that goes into understanding why we can have these new cuts and why we don't have to just roast everything to death. There's a steak that could be had for this that could be flash roasted and fried. To tell us about that and the importance of sort of understanding the science, the chemistry in this meat.
Sure. One of the things that was instrumental in helping add value specifically to beef is that scientists from the University of Florida and University of Nebraska analyzed over 5,000 muscles from the chuck and the round, because those aren't the cuts that we think to throw on the grill. So we looked at water holding capacity, tenderness, and pH. And those are all indicators that the steak is going to be much more palatable on a grill. But for example, the flat iron, the second most tender muscle, is surrounded by a scapula bone, connective tissue, and that's not something you would put on the grill. But by going in, teaching them new cutting methods, we can allow the processor to have a new cut. We can add value to the farmer, and it's a win-win all the way through.
It's kind of great, Sarah, because not only do you talk about, you know, women being in the forefront of kind of making these connections, mm-hmm. But also sort of bringing the science to the table, and then educating the consumer. And so it's a kind of a, and then that pushes the demand, and you find yourself the cycle even grows.
Right, absolutely. And it's, you know, we are challenged with the economy of scale. So you're going to see a lot of different business models in this workshop. We have models like First Hand Foods, where Robin is selling her whole animals to, and they're able to buy on a larger scale and get into some larger markets. And then you have folks that are doing meat buying, online buying systems, and all sorts of different models. But yes, yeah, everyone is.
Carrie, let me ask you, you do this nationally. You're in town now for this conference. How does North Carolina compare in terms of the scale and the scope and getting things geared up?
Well, I'm definitely passionate with and have a big heart here for the state of North Carolina. But I find the challenge of finding processing and slaughterhouse opportunities for small farmers is a problem across the country. What's really unique to North Carolina is I just haven't seen a state in the country that made it their strategic focus to say we want to keep agriculture and specifically animal agriculture within the state. And that means that they have to repair a processing community that's not used to having, you know, these customers come in. They have such a heart, especially what I love about what NC Choices is doing within the state of North Carolina is their passion to focus on helping women. You know, how do we move these lower waged earners from packagers and customer service to maybe cutters and meat cutters? And then, you know, we've had people here just getting into the business now that want to become farmers. How do we help them gain access to capital and things like that? So North Carolina, in my opinion, is a cut above.
And NC, oh, well done. Well played. Well done. NC Joyce is also the universities that may play a part in this. So the idea of land-grant ag and tech universities are playing an active role in this. Right?
Absolutely. NC Choices is a program of CEFS, and CEFS stands for the Center for Environmental Farming Systems. And that is a partnership with two land-grant universities and North Carolina Department of Ag. So we have this triad partnership as our parent organization, and that really allows us to expand our reach. And we've seen in North Carolina this huge jump of producers that are interested in selling meat direct. And it's because of these partnerships that we're able to tap into this great network of producers and learn from and work with them.
State and A&T, you know, the two universities.
That's right, NC State and NC A&T and NCDA.
So, Robin, how has your life changed? How has business changed for you with this kind of increase in interest?
Well, I'll go back to last year when I first attended the first meat conference, and I, from the contacts I made there, was able to go home and get a meat handler's license, which is... There are 700 plus in North Carolina now, but I'm glad to be able to sell directly from our home to the consumer. And I also, through NC Choices, met Jennifer Curtis, who's with First Hand Foods, that gave us another marketing option for our whole animal. So it's changed the way we make breeding decisions, changes the way we make feeding decisions, which all of our animals are pasture raised, but we want to produce, because we have a registered background, we want to produce a good eating experience for someone that eats beef. If you don't get a good steak, you don't want another one. So we want to feed our animals enough or supplement them from the pasture that they're gaining 2 to 3 pounds a day so that they can lay down that intermuscular fat that gives beef its taste and tenderness that you want to go back and have again.
Oh, the perfect lunchtime conversation. I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Robin Hampton, co-owner and operator of Back Creek in Mount Ulla, North Carolina. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Sarah Blacklin is director of NC Choices, who helped put on the Women Working in the Meat Business Conference. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks so much.
And also with us is, Carrie. Carrie is with us. I'm going to find the name of your book, Carrie Underley, who is a butcher and the author of, here it is, The Art of Beef Cutting. Carrie Underley, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.